You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
When will it be the place to be again? It is Carlin, 98.7 ESPN. What a show tonight. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Earlier today, a Buster Olney tweet set off a firestorm. We will discuss where the Mets will be starting first as they open things up on the free agent market. We will also, during the course of this show, give you a hot take unlike any other that has drawn immense criticism of me on the World Wide Web. Also, we will get to the inexplicable from the New York Yankees and what they could possibly be thinking, because they are on the verge of making a colossal error. But we will start this evening with the New York Knicks and with the NBA. 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. Load up the phone lines early at 7:30. The man, Adrian Wojnarowski, will join us right here on 98.7 ESPN. We will talk all things Knicks, Nets, NBA coming up at the bottom of the hour. Very much looking forward to that. And that's, in essence, where we're going to start tonight with the Knicks, because we are left after the weekend with, I don't want to say disappointment, but we are left with kind of a confused feeling, aren't we? You were in a situation where you have plenty of cap space, you have opportunities to potentially get better, but you also have pitfalls that you need to avoid. Among them, we've talked about, whether it was Gordon Hayward or players of that ilk, or guys even less that weren't that good of a player to begin with that you could have brought here for big money you didn't need to, that would have hamstrung you for the next few years. We've talked about the trades, and you all know how I feel about Russell Westbrook. We've talked about all the other possibilities that there are. But when you come out of the weekend feeling good that they didn't position themselves poorly, yet you also feel bad that they really didn't improve all that much. And what you are staring in the face is another ugly season. What really made me think of all this again this afternoon is just the fact that the Knicks are tied with a few other teams, Cavaliers, a couple others, can't even remember who specifically, but are tied with three or four other teams as having the worst odds at winning the NBA championship next year. Not that we ever expected it to be any better than that, but it just sunk in at 500-1. And that number feels light, doesn't it, where things are right now? I stand by what I said last week. After the draft, bringing in Obi Toppin quickly, I think the Knicks are better. And I genuinely feel excited about basketball for the first time in a long time in New York. Not that they're going to be great right away. We all know that's not going to happen. But that they are going to at least exercise caution and not just throw everything up against the wall to see what sticks. Now, some would argue that my particular take on Russell Westbrook is not exercising caution. And I would understand why you would feel that way. I just don't happen to agree. Especially when, to me, the price tag would be quite little. But who knows if that's even going to happen, right? Who knows if Westbrook even gets moved this year? So with all of that in mind, where does it leave us? Well, anybody of real significance that was on the market is gone. I mean, Brandon Ingram was brought up yesterday, a couple others, but most of these guys were staying for the max deals that they got. You didn't expect any different. I don't think you should have expected Fred VanVleet to walk through Madison Square Garden's door. And I don't even necessarily think it would have been the best fit right now. You know what it feels like? You have some adults in the room. And that's a good thing. What I worry about is this. There are only so many times that opportunity presents itself to get much better as an organization. And when I say that, I'm referencing, you know, the opportunity to make the big trade, the opportunity to position yourself for the future, not necessarily through the free agent market, but also through making deals and making the right draft picks and all that. I think they accomplished part of that last week. I worry that maybe it's unfair because it's very early. I worry that there's going to be a little hesitance. I worry that there's going to be a little concern on Leon Rose's part to not necessarily get after it when the chance arises. Like, I've heard it go back and forth quite a bit the last few weeks to maybe you can try X, Y, and Z. Now they have to go win now, which is something that I think you just have to get better here rather sooner than later. But it doesn't feel like that's going to happen. It feels more like you're going to have to exercise real patience. And I know a lot of Knicks fans are okay with that. You're okay with it right now. Are you going to be okay with it in a year? Are you going to be okay with it in a year and a half, 2 years? Like, where's the cutoff point? That's honestly what I want to know. Is it going to take Giannis walking through the door next year? Because I would not think that's going to happen. What exactly is it going to take for you to get out of the realm of patience and get into the realm of, okay, it's time to actually win some games. Not compete for a championship yet, but it's time to actually do something. Because it strikes me that it's just so easy, it can happen in the blink of an eye, that you can ride through a season, be bad, place all your hopes in a basket full of ping pong balls, and then if that doesn't come up the way you want it to, and you end up with a player that you don't necessarily want, or a player that isn't necessarily a franchise player, then you get comfortable just trying it again. Let's take another shot at it. Let's see. Let's not be overly aggressive. Let's leave ourselves with cap flexibility. Let's do all that. All I want to see is, I guess, cautious aggression. And I know that's oxymoronic or just moronic when you talk about who's saying this. But I look at it and I say that the aggression, while I appreciate the caution, is ultimately going to win it for you. The aggression at the right time. So when that presents itself, will they know it? Will they know this is the chance that we have to take to make this happen? This is the player who's unhappy where he is, who's going to potentially make us a great organization again. I have faith in the leadership of it, but I've been thinking an awful lot about that word patience, and it's an ugly word in that it gets you just into such a cycle, doesn't it? We've seen it with so many teams in this town that you have to be patient, you have to be patient, and then you are patient and nothing happens, and an administration is swept out because nothing happened, or because you made moves that didn't work. And then the next group comes in and you have to be patient. You have to be patient. Patient is basically a curse word in so many ways. Yet it's something that you have to live and die by. I just hope, and I wonder for you, that they are going to be aggressive in the moment that they need to be, recognizing that moment. It's not easy. I think a lot of these teams that fall into the pattern of trying to ride out the losing for better draft picks because there's no other way for them to get big players. I think those teams end up putting a lot of faith in players that haven't played in the league yet and don't necessarily know what it's about. 800-919-3776. What's your level of patience? How much are you willing to exercise? That's what I want to know right now. How much patience are you willing to exercise? A couple of comments that we got over there. First up is Dan Moffitt. When Durant and Irving passed, everything went back to square one in reference to the Knicks from last year. You know, yes and no. Like, you were hoping that they would want to come here, but square one, I don't think that's where we are right now. You're in position to strike when the opportunity presents itself. It's just not an attractive enough situation yet. That's what's the most troubling about all of it, is that this is not the place to be. And maybe that was taken for granted for a long time. You know, even when things were bad, people were going to games and players still had a healthy respect for what Madison Square Garden is. I look at it now and I don't necessarily believe that MSG presents anything special to players of today. Because what do they have to base that on? There has never been a great Knick team in their lifetime. You know, it for the players, I mean, think about it. The players who were in their mid-30s right now were what? 7, 8 years old with those great Knick teams? And maybe 99, 2000, they were in their teens. They remember that. But we're talking about 20 years ago now. So none of these guys, you know, the younger players are really going to remember what the building is like when it's electric and why it's a special place to be. And that's possibly the most difficult part of this, to understand that there is not a special quality to the building right now. And that is what has to be brought back. And it's kind of a chicken or the egg thing, right? That, all right, can you find a way to attract that big free agent to come here before it's special, but you can't make it special without having that big-time player? 800-919-3776. We start tonight with Fonzie in Hawthorne, New Jersey. Fonzie, what up?
Hey, how you doing, Chris?
I'm great. How you doing?
We're good. We're good. I'm with my son. We're driving. We're listening to you about talking about the Knicks, and we agree with you. You know, there doesn't seem like anybody wants to come to New York anymore. It's not so attractive. And I think that's why we need to be super patient and start building something from now.
All right, define super patient. What does super patient look like?
In New York, you know, there is no patience. There's never been patience. And we've never, and not, that's why we're in the position we're in, where we haven't been in the playoffs and had a good team for a long time.
But I understand that. How long are you willing to wait? Are you there?
Oh.
How long are you willing to wait?
I'm willing to wait 5 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. People are usually never willing to wait that long. And we haven't waited that long, and now it's been like 20 years, and we've had really bad teams.
Yeah, you have had really bad teams, and thanks for the call. That's why I'm surprised by thinking about 5 years down the line. Like, that to me is, that's not patience. That's just, that's living in a fantasy land. That's just holding nobody accountable for anything if you're going to do that. 5 years is just not wanting it to happen or not demanding that it happen. You know, building from within, this is not like building an NFL team back in the mid-80s or the mid-90s. That's not what this is. You know, wanting to build it the right way and have good young players and all that develop, that's fantastic, okay? That's what Brooklyn did. It took them a long time to do it, and then they went out and struck when the iron was hot, and they had to sign a player that they knew was going to miss an entire season. So now you're hoping that this that Kevin Durant is back to being who he was before, and you're hoping that you can avoid Kyrie Irving getting, you know, Kyrie Irving-like situation, you know, blowing it up. That's what you cannot afford to have. Dave is in Belmore. Next, 98.7 ESPN. Dave, what do you got?
Hey, Chris, how's it going?
I'm outstanding, Dave. How are you tonight, buddy?
I am wonderful. So I just wanted to say that the difference for me this year, going into this year, is that they finally have some assistant coaches that have some developmental skills. Nobody has been able to train and work with these kids like Knox and Frank Ntilikina. Finally, we got Kenny Payne. We got Johnny Bryant, guys that know how to teach these kids how to play in the NBA.
I don't disagree with that part of it, that you have guys who are good at it. But when does it become about the players themselves? Now, with Knox, I will give you some latitude, even though it's been frustrating to watch him his first couple of years, especially regress in year two. You know, with Ntilikina, when do we actually hold the player accountable for not being better?
I mean, this year, probably.
I would argue before that, that's just me. I don't know that he's been through the ringer. It hasn't been the worst thing in the world for Frank Ntilikina. He just has only shown flashes here and there. And those guys, to me, the guys that only show flashes are the ones that ultimately just tantalize you and can make you make decisions that are not good decisions. Because when you can't see that consistency and you just start to believe that it's eventually going to come based on the flashes, you're caught left holding the bag.
No, I think with him, though, it's you see the defense is there, and you just hope that the offense can catch up eventually.
Yeah, I just... Here's what I would like for Frank Ntilikina: to be a starting point guard in the NBA. Is that asking too much?
I think this is the year he has to prove it.
You know what I mean by that, and thanks for the call. Just be a serviceable starting point guard in the NBA. That's it. And I would argue I would have liked to have heard it, or seen it rather, sooner than this past year, or than this coming year. But I have very little faith in Ntilikina. I will have more faith in a guy like Knox, just from a standpoint of getting somebody he's familiar with here, with Kenny Payne, and understanding that he's still an exceptionally, exceptionally young player. Not that Frank isn't, but I've watched him the last couple of years, and it's, what's the words I'm looking for? Not enjoyable to watch him play. Is that fair? I think it is. How about Jonathan in Queens next on 98.7 ESPN? Big Johnny, what's going on, dude? How are you?
Hey, going well, Carlin. How you doing?
I'm outstanding, brother. What do you got?
I just got to say, man, you know, I've been working nights lately, and I've been tuning on to your show, and I much appreciate what you do, man. Great, great show. I'm tuning in every time
that,
I get
man.
The chance
Thank
now.
You for listening. Keeps me from having to get a real job, so that's cool.
Oh, man. So about my Knicks, I've been a longtime Knicks fan for forever. I'm only 34 years old. So I've been going through the 90s to the 2000s.
So what is your best memory of the Knicks? Is it 2000? What's your best memory of the Knicks? The 2000, 99, 2000 Knicks?
I would say 98, 99. Yeah. 98, 99.
When they went to the finals.
Best years. Yeah, when they went to the finals, Jeff Van Gundy. Haven't had a coach like that in a long time. Hopefully Tibbs is able to change it up. But, mm-hmm. For the last callers that were calling, yes, I can't wait 5 years for the Knicks to try to make a move. I'm done being patient. I need Westbrook to happen. You understand? We have to give up, I kind of like Ntilikina, and I heard your take on him, mm-hmm. but he kind of reminds me of a Bruce Bowen. you could teach offense, but you can't really teach defense. And somebody that's willing to play all five or defend all five positions, that's hard to come by. So I kind of like Ntilikina, but if I got to give up Ntilikina, Knox, Randall, Payton, Spellman, whoever the guys, Dallas draft picks, I'm willing to do it for Westbrook. Because that mentality that he'll bring to the Knicks, that attitude, that type of dog mentality that he'll change the atmosphere around the Knicks locker room, you know, we need that. We haven't had that where we're going to hold players accountable in a long time. And I really think Dennis Smith Jr. will learn under Ntilikina. I mean, excuse me, I'm sorry about that.
Under Westbrook.
Under Westbrook.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to have to give up a ton to get Westbrook, to tell you the truth, and thanks for the call. I think they're going to be more in a position where if they actually went and got him, they would be taking the contracts off Houston's hands. And so with that, you're not going to have to give them very much in terms of the return. You're doing them a big favor. You know, even so, like I would have done it last week with the eighth pick. Hopefully Obi Toppin turns out to be terrific. But real assets, you're not giving that to them right now. You're not doing that. You know, I'm going to get back to the Knicks here in just a second. But from a Nets standpoint, we talked about it very briefly with Woj, and you really got the impression that Woj did not think for a second that Harden is going to end up here and that the Rockets are in a position to really try to ride it out a little bit with Harden and then see where they are maybe during the season. I can't be convinced otherwise right now that Harden is worth going and getting for the kind of haul that they wanted in return. When you're talking about all those players and all of the draft picks and pick swaps and all that stuff, it makes absolutely no sense for the Nets who, as Woj was talking about, they have developed these players. They have really taken Spencer Dinwiddie and Joe Harris and Caris LeVert and Jared Allen and turned them into terrific NBA players, very solid players. Maybe not superstars, but that next level of player, they're pretty good. I mean, everybody was lining up to get Joe Harris as well as he shoots the basketball. And I can remember a couple of years ago being over in Brooklyn saying, who the hell is Joe Harris? Who the hell is Spencer Dinwiddie? It wasn't all that long ago. Look at what they've done with those guys. And you think about adding them to Durant and Kyrie, this is a championship team potentially already with the amount of star power plus excellent role players on it. I really love what they look like. And I think if you were to add Harden to that mix and take away those other pieces, you're asking for trouble. Harden, Durant, Kyrie. Do you honestly for a second believe that those three are going to work well together when you have those kind of personalities? I mean, you have three of the most volatile personalities in terms of behind the scenes, not screaming and yelling at each other, but who they just want to deal with and who they want to play with and how they want to play. Are they going to be able to make that work? You know, Golden State, when Durant went to Golden State, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson could make that work without a problem. And Durant knew going in, considering they had already won a championship without him, that he had to kind of fit in. Not that he wasn't going to be the same kind of player that he's always been, but he had to fit in with everybody else. And that's what he did. And now you have a much different scenario. I would not add James Harden to that mix. That's like adding some lighter fluid on top of a fire. And not in a good way. You know, lighting the fire to play harder and all that, that's great. Lighting the fire to blow it up, that's a disaster. And I think, frankly, if that's what they're going to do, then it could really implode on them. I don't think they're going to do it. And I think you saw Sean Marks last week basically draw the line in the sand, say, look, don't even bother if you're coming at us with the kind of ridiculous demands that you are. 800-919-3776. Jamil in Brooklyn, has been very patient, ironically, wants to talk about patience with the Knicks. Jamil, what was longer, waiting on that line or how long you're willing to wait for the Knicks?
I would say how long I'm willing to for the Knicks.
Okay, let's talk about it. How long does that mean?
I heard another caller call in, and he was saying he would give about 5 years for the wait time. I wouldn't go as far as 5 years, but I would say let's give this new regime, let's give this new coaching staff, let's give them some time, let's give them a year, let's give them two, to see what they can bring up out of these young players, see how they can develop them. And then let's see what we have as far as going for free agents. You know, I completely agree with Woj. Westbrook his timeline is not for the Knicks. It doesn't make any sense going for Westbrook, honestly. And I agree with you with the Brooklyn. I agree with you with what you said about Brooklyn with James Harden. They don't need James Harden. James Harden can go to Philly. I think Philly would be better off with James Harden with Embiid.
I got to tell you, I don't think James Harden's a winning player. I don't think he's a winning player.
You know what? I used to think that as well, but last playoffs, these recent playoffs that I've seen out of him, he definitely looked like he's coming around to be a winner player. I've seen a lot of intangibles out of him this playoffs. I felt like he didn't have Westbrook for a couple games. You know, that mm-hmm. had a lot to do with their record. But I feel like Harden. I feel like it could work. It just doesn't make sense though. It's just too much firepower. They don't need it. They got enough players on Brooklyn. They're fine where they are.
All right, so a year or two is what you're willing to wait.
Yeah, just give us some woo-saw a little bit. Chris, I hear you going off about Westbrook. You won Westbrook. Nah, man. Trust me. I've watched a lot of OKC games. I used to follow the Thunder. And he's good. He's a great player, but he's just not the fit. He's just not the fit for the Knicks.
Yeah, my only problem with it, Jamil, and thanks for the call, is what I've talked about a lot. And listen, I'm not trying to beat a dead horse here on the Westbrook thing. But it's simply, if you're going to get a star player or a superstar player to come here, right now it feels like you're going to have to make the trade to get them. Because otherwise, what is making this an attractive enough situation for them to come? I mean, you even heard Woj talking about the relationships with Leon and Wes and how they're building that. But a year from now, don't necessarily expect it to be the case where the big-time free agents are lining up. To me, that's, it's bothersome. I know it takes time. I understand that. It's just, you're just in this cycle constantly, right? And you want immediate results from, or at least results within reason. We always used to talk about, remember, 10, 12, 13 years ago, that for whatever reason, we felt like Madison Square Garden and management with the Knicks did not believe that you could tear down the Knicks and people would still care and the fans would be okay with it. So they were always trying to play it down the middle and trying to, in some ways, not in the same way as far as spending money, but in some ways as far as talent acquisition, we're doing what the Mets did for the longest time, trying to find their way to get better without completely ripping it apart. And we always said and always felt, and I think that's been bared out here recently, Knicks fans are willing to wait and tear it down to see it be done the right way and be able to draft some superstar players. We haven't seen it yet. Hopefully Obi Toppin's going to be a really good NBA player. Is he going to end up being a superstar NBA player? I'm not so sure about that, but I'm really happy about him coming here. Let's hit Sam in Marlboro next, 98.7 ESPN. Sam, what's cooking, brother? How are you doing?
Great show. Better than usual because of the show, man. After the Woj bomb, how could you top that?
Yeah, exactly. I cannot be thankful enough for Woj coming on and giving me 15 minutes. That was really exceptionally nice of him.
And Twitter thanks him. He deserves it. But listen, Listen, the Knicks, I give them 6 years. Here's why. Immediate
from
results.
Now? But,
yes. Listen, just listen.
Oh, my God.
Eight first-round picks and 11 second-round picks in the next 6 years. And finally, they know how to execute. Listen, this is an asset management business at the end of the day. No more being capped out to miss the playoffs and pay the luxury tax. When they traded Carmelo Anthony, they got back a second-round pick. That pick turned out to be Mitchell Robinson, who is, you know, amazing. One of the best reasons to watch them. So,
okay, but can we agree on one thing? Can we agree on one thing? When it comes to second-round picks in the NBA, yes, occasionally they turn out. But can we say for the most part they don't turn out to be great players or even really good players in the league or good players, just guys to help?
We can agree to that, and they also don't count in the cap, and the contract is more favorable. But first-round picks, Klay Thompson was picked 11. It feels like the Knicks stick around there every year.
Yeah.
A perennial, you know. So but that's a crapshoot, you know. Usually you should have went higher, but
– I mean, like look, they took Ntilikina high, they took Kevin Knox that high.
Kevin Knox was so young. They both are so young, though. Like, Ntilikina was the youngest player in the draft, and he was honestly the best defender in that draft. And what, he has to learn how to shoot? Come on. Listen,
I know, he's 22 years old, okay? I'm not giving up on I'm close to giving up on Ntilikina.
We all are. Trust me. Trust me. Yeah. The kid needs confidence. And remember that game in Cleveland when LeBron was shoving him? Even though we lost and we blew like a 20-point lead, the media was praising him for, you know, standing up to LeBron. Listen, I think the kid could still make it. The kid has a 7-foot wingspan plus from a point guard position. So it's like you have a center playing.
I know, but like all the things that you're talking about are the things that I heard 3 years ago.
He grew. He grew an inch.
He grew an inch. He's 6'4" now. Oh my God! Please.
Be positive here, man.
I know you are, and I appreciate that about you, Sam. And thanks for the call. But 6 years, man. 6 years. Come on. I'm not waiting 6 years for them to be any good. I mean. 6 years? How would you possibly be able to wait that long and it would be acceptable? I mean, I know what I just said about tearing it down and building it back up, but 6 years? I realize this isn't the NFL. This is not a situation where GMs and coaches can come and go quickly and teams can actually try to do some things relatively quickly to get better. You can't really do that in the NBA, ironically, and you only have 12 players on the team. You do need two star players on the team to go and win. But 6 years? Unless you got nothing better to do with your time, or you got other things to distract you at least, that's unacceptable. I can't wait that long on a team. Six, like that's potentially another administration from now. And the new guy hasn't even been inaugurated yet. Middle of the next administration. Who knows? Michael Kay pointed this out earlier today, and thank the good Lord that he did. I missed this on last night's Yankees Hot Stove because we were on the air. But this, to me, is such a troubling soundbite from Aaron Boone regarding Gary Sanchez. Troubling and telling. Take a listen.
Well, I would say it's a really hard game. And like I said, with Gleyber being a young player, Gary came up at a very demanding position, the most demanding position on the field. And especially when you're the level of talent that he is offensively, and you carry a load that he does offensively, there's inevitably going to be some growing pains that go along with becoming a major league catcher. And I think he's been unfairly criticized a lot. I think at times it's over the top and people are blinded by some of the things that he's done really well. You know, this year was certainly a challenging year for him and a struggle for him in a lot of ways, but that's okay. I mean, that's part of the game. You know, sometimes you have a tough season. And this season was tough for so many people across the league for different reasons. But we understand that Gary is a major talent. And while he struggled in certain areas, he's also made amazing strides in certain areas. And again, like with all our players, it's important that we continue to come alongside and hopefully continue to develop him to be the player that so many of us believe he can be.
Where do I start? I mean, this is, first of all, the biggest thing that you take away from that is that Gary Sanchez isn't going anywhere. And I'm one of the people that believed all along that he's not going to be here this coming year. That right there made me think that he is going to be here. That was not the let me try to rebuild some of his value by showing how much we value him by making good comments about him. In other words, other teams will pay attention to that and say, maybe we need to rethink that. No. That was making sure that Gary Sanchez's precious psyche is going to be intact for next year. I can't tell you how upsetting that comment is. This can't be the way it works. The Yankees, by keeping Gary Sanchez, are operating in fear that he will go somewhere else and he will become the consistent player that they always expected him to be. I understand completely that they have, 10, 11 years invested in Gary Sanchez. But what more do you need to see? What more do you need to see? When it mattered the most, a guy who has been in baseball, in Major League Baseball, for 4 years now, was sitting on the bench and couldn't get off the bench during the postseason. Had 8 postseason at-bats just ridiculous. Between playing Cleveland and beating them, obviously had a big home run there, but, you know, against the Rays, wasn't anywhere to be found. Nowhere to be found. This can't be how they operate. This is so against the Yankee mentality. I mean, the ace who did everything he could in the first month of the season to prop up Gary Sanchez and talk about what an amazing job he's doing behind the plate and how he just gets it across the board and he's freaking brilliant. And they're so good together. Gerrit Cole wanted no part of him. No part whatsoever. When it came to catching him late in the year and in the postseason. The team didn't want to play him. The team couldn't play him. You know why? They were trying to win. And Gary Sanchez was a liability at the plate. Let's not talk about all the pressure that's been put on him over the years. He has performed before. But if you watch what's gone on, it has been a very real regression of a player. And it's not just about what's in his head. A lot of it is, but it's not just about that. It's that physically, he hasn't gotten a whole lot better. Defensively, he has certainly not gotten better. And the offense has in no way outweighed what he did defensively. In no way. Elimination game. Gary Sanchez is on the bench against the Rays. Think about that. How is it going to go exactly when what we all know is going to happen happens? That Sanchez has a bad first 2 months of the year and he can't get out of his own way. So is it going to be Kyle Higashioka every day? 5-6 days a week? And I like Higashioka. I am under no illusion that he is an everyday player in the big leagues. I think he's a guy that might play 3 times a week, and that's where you might be able to really maximize him. Not like this. Are they going to go get another catcher? Is there a plan B? I mean, clearly Realmuto is not where they're going. That's fine. That's fine. But they're not going to go anywhere big to get a catcher. But they have to have another plan if you're going to ride this out. This fantasy that somehow you're going to recapture Gary Sanchez has just got to stop. this operating in fear that he's going to not blossom, because he's already blossomed, re-blossom somewhere else, is folly. So what if he does? All it showed is he couldn't do it here. You know, you gave up a ton, and you were paying a lot more to Sonny Gray, and you gave up on him like that. And you're not looking back at the fact that he went to Cincinnati, pitched well, and now they're looking to trade him again because they want to maximize the return for him. You couldn't get him out of town fast enough. Well, Gary Sanchez is the Sonny Gray here of catchers, except you're paying him a lot less than you were paying Gray. You gave up a lot to get Gray at the time, and then you gave him away for nothing. And I get that. The guy wasn't a New York guy. You made up your mind pretty damn quickly about him. Stop worrying about somebody going somewhere else and becoming great there. And you missed out. When it comes to patience here, that's where it's got to be thrown out the window. And allow me, just as we finish this little monologue, to paint this picture real quick. Imagine being in a world where Gary Sanchez returns and DJ LeMahieu is gone. That world could very well exist. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Chris in Mahwah is next on 98.7. Christopher, what's cooking?
Hey, what's up, my man?
How you?
So, couple Knicks points.
Go.
I vehemently disagree with you on trading for Westbrook.
Okay.
I'm going to just very quickly go through a history lesson. 2001 to 2014 New York Knicks. Othello Harrington, Antonio McDyess, Stephon Marbury, Eddie Curry, Steve Francis, Tracy McGrady. Dumping David Lee, Jamal Crawford, and Zach Randolph to get cap space to sign Stoudemire, trading for Carmelo Anthony. We gave up a boatload of young players and draft picks to toil for 13 years. So when you say how long were we willing to wait, we waited that long while doing the Win Now plan. So why not wait that long to do the Build From Within plan, the plan that worked for the Golden State Warriors? You know, and look at the Brooklyn Nets trade when they traded for the big three from the Celtics.
Oh, that was a horrible trade. Listen, that was a horrible trade, but you're missing what I'm saying here about Westbrook, okay? I would not give away assets to get Westbrook. In at this point, I would not. I have to be in a situation where I'm doing them a favor by taking him off your hands. You want some second-round picks? Here's a handful. Go nuts. You know,
if they want to give us a pick, I would take it for Westbrook, but I don't even want to take up the cap space. I want to borrow a phrase from the 76ers and trust the process. Oof. We got a ton of future picks. We
How's
have Obi Toppin, RJ Barrett, Mitchell Robinson. We could see them come up, maybe get a younger free agent, and I don't care when it comes, but a younger free agent that fits their timeline. Next year's draft with Cade Cunningham, is it? Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to be him, but it's a better draft. And I also disagree with you about Frank Ntilikina. He was drafted as a triangle point guard. Triangle point guard isn't really a lead guard. It was a Derek Fisher, James Paxton, Ron Harper, B.J. Armstrong.
Oh, okay.
You know, I think the Ntilikina comp is maybe more of a Tony Allen or a Marcus Smart, a Rajah Bell.
And he's none of those guys.
Defensive player. Tony Allen was a lockdown defender with no offense. I think
do you think he's Marcus Smart? You think he can be Marcus Smart?
I don't see that. Maybe. Why can't he?
Because I don't see anything out of his game that makes me think that, other than defense. Everybody wants to point to the defense, and that's fine. I respect the fact that he defends like he does, but the rest of his game is maddening. You know, and it's why people are screaming and yelling for a point guard. I know what you're saying about the triangle and all that. What matters here is that you actually have to be productive in some way other than just defending, and that's not what he's been.
maybe he could be in like an off-ball type guy, like a wing or something like that, a bench player. He doesn't have to be a starter.
Listen, I'm not saying hand him away for nothing, but to me, this is it. This is it. And thanks for the call. This is it. But as far as, you know, everything else, I understand where you're coming from with all of what you cited in the past with Antonio McDyess, with players like that. I get that. This guy is not that. And you're not giving anything away to get this guy. I feel like he's got two great years left in him. And if you get him here and he's making other people better, maybe it becomes a situation where somebody else wants to come join him for a year or two. That's all. And you can afford it from a cap perspective. This does not bury you on a cap situation. It doesn't. You can afford it. The Knicks had $45 million or whatever it was to start with last week. $40 million to start with last week before the Ed Davis trade. But I'm jumping up and down because Ed Davis, he netted us more second-round picks. As I said the other night, the Knicks, by the end of it, are going to have every second-round pick in the next five drafts. And it's going to mean very little to me. You know, you understand what I'm saying. I know that there are second-round players that come out, and I hope that they do. But trusting the process, okay, maybe they'll draft three centers in a row. Maybe you can go do that. Or better yet, they could go then and draft a point guard that's amazing but can't shoot. And then have it completely implode on them with Markelle Fultz. Although I can't really cite Markelle Fultz very much because I died on that mountain when I was in Philadelphia. I talked about how they should absolutely take him and he's going to be a star. I didn't realize that he would show up to training camp and left his jump shot in college when he shot 45% from three. Carlin, 98.7 ESPN. I'm not still bitter about that at all. 800-919-3776. Oh, the calls are rolling. Let's keep them coming on the open lines. Also, more on the Yankees. And please tell me where I'm wrong on Gary Sanchez returning, because that sounds like what is happening. And if that's happening, that's a disaster. I love holidays. I love everything about them. Turkey sucks. That's just fact. Turkey sucks. Give me all the sides. Give me everything else. Turkey sucks. Now, let me explain from whence I'm coming on this. I understand that when I grew up, as it turns out, my mother did not know how to cook. Just, well, I guess you'd say an absolute butcher in the kitchen. But when it came to turkey, every year at Thanksgiving, I had to drink a gallon of water to get through the four slices on my plate. And the reason being, she dried that thing out so badly. I didn't know turkey wasn't supposed to be dry. I loved everything else. Loved the sides. Can't get enough of the sides. Stuffing? Oh, are you kidding me? Give me the sweet potatoes. Give me anything you want. The green beans, I'm there. I'm on board. Give me all the sides. Give me, you know, I couldn't be in an Italian family where you have everything leading up to it. Which basically, by the time you get to the bird, you don't even need to eat it. You've had pasta dish. You've had, all the meats and everything beforehand. All of the appetizers are just off the charts. And then I get to turkey. And this is just fact. Turkey sucks. It sucks. I've had it several times where it's perfectly juicy and everybody's raving over it, and I do the right thing. I sit there and I say, yeah. Wow, this is lovely. This is great. This is top-notch. I'm sorry. It's the the most overrated part of this holiday. I love seeing my family. I'm not going to see them this year. Most of us aren't, and it sucks. There's no getting around that. There will not be a bird within 500 yards of my house. I'd take a restraining order out on turkey if I could. This year, we will be making a lovely lasagna, and I will be an honorary Italian this season. Maybe we still make some of the other sides. My wife loves everything. She loves turkey, but she loves all the sides as well. She's on board with that. She understands. Why would I want this bird that takes me 6 weeks to cook in an oven? I'm supposed to just pay close attention to it every last second of my afternoon. And if I overcook it just a hair or undercook it just a hair, screwed. Absolutely screwed. I will offer this one caveat. It's simply this. I have never had fried turkey. I am willing to try. I have friends who are trying to do it for the first time this year with the deep fryer. I have heard of nightmare scenarios where that blows up on you and you better know what the hell you're doing. I would give that a chance. Any other kind of turkey? You can tell me about the brine. You can tell me about, you know, soaking it and doing all the right things and rubbing it with spices and all that crap. You can take your bird. Okay? I'll take everything else. Should have let that thing live and walk the earth, honestly. Couldn't be more overrated. I know people just can't get enough of turkey. Please. Please. There are so many better things on this earth. Why can't we make it about, you know what would be great on Thanksgiving? I'd be very thankful for a steak. That'd be great. Steaks would be phenomenal. That would work. Like I said, making a lasagna on Thursday, hopefully, if I get my act together. I can cook a little bit. I would like to learn how to grill more. I grill okay, but nowhere near where it needs to be. Put the tri-tip out there a few years ago. My brother Steve, same thing. Love him to death. Hates turkey. Hates it. You know what he made? He made some London broil a few years ago. It was delightful. We had it at his home. My mother, in her mid-80s, says, where's the bird? Where's the turkey? Listen, lady, you're the one who put it in the oven for 6 weeks at a time. That thing wouldn't come out until it was falling apart at every possible area it was dried out. You got some nerve asking for turkey. You didn't know what the hell you were doing. I love my mother, but, you know, listen. Cooking, as it turned out, like I never knew any better. Cooking, as it turned out, not her thing. Loved her spaghetti and meatballs. Loved it. Anything else? Pot roast? Meatloaf? God. Love her to death. 88 years old, and the only reason I can say all this is I know there's no chance in hell she's listening in her assisted living home right now. But this is my point. It has nothing, as much as we can talk about, it has to do with my history with the bird. It actually doesn't. I've tried it every which way except for fried. Not once have I come away from it thinking, got to get me some more of that. Not once. I officially give the bird to the bird. That's right. 98.7 ESPN, Carlin, 800-919-3776. Joe in Colonia, appropriately enough. Hello, Joe.
Chris, I couldn't agree with you 100% more.
Well, now I'm questioning it.
No, oh boy. I don't like turkey at all. Even chicken, I don't care for. If I eat chicken, I like the chicken necks and the heart, and that's it.
I don't really eat the chicken necks and the heart, but I like chicken.
Well, if it's done right, you would love it. But anyway, I agree with you with Sanchez. Three guys I think need to go is Sanchez, Stanton, and Judge. Stanton and Judge are part-time players.
Well, no, they're not part-time players. You're just not going to be able to. They're part-time players because they're hurt all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Sanchez, you're not going to be able to get rid of Stanton. If you wanted to talk about trading Judge, I would not be against that.
I agree with you on that. And Sanchez, can you even consider him a catcher?
What else could he possibly be? He's not a DH because, you know, in order, like, I'd look at designated hitter,
right,
and I would think that person could, you know, hit.
And my thing is, and I'm not comparing them, believe me, I'm not. Mike Piazza would be a great DH. He would be the next Edgar Martinez in the American League if he was a DH. Catching-wise, he wasn't all that great, but hitting-wise, he was awesome.
Mike Piazza would have hit 500 home runs if he was a DH.
Exactly.
I absolutely believe that.
And Sanchez, you put him in the National League or American League, between the pass balls, the strikeouts, I can't put him as a catcher.
I can't put him as even a good hitter right now, Joe. Thanks for the call. I don't know that I would look at anything that Sanchez does right now and feel good about his ability to be a serviceable major league player again. I really don't. I just think that he's at a position now where if you're going to have a player like this that you've invested all this in and you're not willing to ever call it quits, you're hurting yourself. Your judgment's completely clouded. Completely. When you get blinded by these guys sometimes, whether it's how much investment you put into them or how much you believe in the flashes of how great they can be, it ends up costing you. And I just imagine a world where next season, Gary Sanchez is back and DJ LeMahieu isn't. Because that could very easily happen.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.